In the last hour which I spoke, I made a mistake. I referred to the top of the market as being December of 69 at 995 or something. It was December of 68. So if some of you are a little more keen than some others on investments, you probably recognize that mistake. In the brochure that comes with the book of Dr. Peterson's, he has this book, Here's How to Succeed with Your Money, which I referred to last time. So you can get it from there for 75 cents. Okay, I outlined six different topics last time that I would hope to cover in an additional hour. And so I'll try and squeeze it in 30 minutes, as you know. Number one, as Christians, are we obligated to invest? I think I covered that rather extensively, but let me share with you two more passages of Scripture. Proverbs 6:6, 7, and 8, and that's page 902 in the New American Standard Bible, which says, "Grant to the ant, O sluggard, observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief, officers, or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest." Of course, this is referring to an animal, and it's referring to food, which I'll cover later in my half hour. But I think it certainly applies to us as humans, or it wouldn't be in the Bible as an example. In Proverbs 30:24 and 25, page 933, it says, "Four, F-O-U-R, things are small on the earth, but they are exceedingly wise. The ants are not a strong folk, but they prepare their food in the summer." Obviously, the summer is the harvest time, the time when food is plentiful, rather than winter. And I think we're in the summertime of some trials and tribulations that our world is going to have with pestilence and famine, floods, which we're already experiencing. We're experiencing many of the things that are mentioned in Daniel and Ezekiel and Revelation. But most of the things I'll be talking about this morning are going to assume that the rapture will not occur for some period of time, and that we will have to pass through considerable amount of tribulation as Christians under the domination of a totalitarian government, whether it be ours in this country or whether we're amalgamated into a world government, which has already, of course, been established along with the World Church and lots of other world organizations that you know as well as I do, so I won't go into that. All right, number two, if we must invest, what do we invest? And I gave you those four things: money, time, talents, and love. Now, talents and love cost you nothing out of your pocket, no money, no personal cost, except maybe the tension and the tribulation of trying to deal with another person that doesn't think the way you do. Your energy could cost you that. But it is unlimited, except for the time you have to devote to it, to witnessing to somebody else, sharing your love and your talents. But money and time do cost you something. Money is time, as any salesman will know, or be taught, told. And you do have this personal cost out of your pocket, out of your life. You only have so much time on earth, and you have only so much money that the Lord is going to give to you over your lifespan of your earning years. So these two things are very close, money and time, as opposed to talents and love on the other side. Three, into what do we invest these things? And I outlined 14 different things. A tithe, and I really feel that we are obligated, although neither Elvin and I can come up with any definite scripture, that we're admonished indirectly to tithe our time also. 24 hours in a day. I personally subtract 8 hours for sleeping, which I never get. But that leaves 18 hours, one-tenth of that is 1.8 hours a day that I try to devote to the Lord's work in one fashion or another. And I think this is an important thing. Our money is very expensive out of our pocket, except as the Lord showers us with His blessings as we give back to Him, which everything that is His, of course. But our time, it's not our time, it's His time. He can end it at any time. One of us may not finish the day, who knows? But we have so much and no more, and I feel that we should tithe that time for the Lord's work. I mentioned this so-called joke the other day that somebody said he wasn't going to go if he couldn't take it with him. You can't take it with you, but you can send it ahead. And that's what tithing is all about, I think. Not only your money, but your time also. Of course, we're going to have eternity as far as time is concerned later on. Number two is taxes. And as much as I detest giving to welfare, wars that we're not there to win, wars that may not have a moral, Christian moral foundation to begin with, I'm not going to get into politics or these other areas of life that we could discuss, but we're admonished in the Bible to render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. And if you don't want to pay taxes, go somewhere else. It's as simple as that, as far as I can see from Scripture. And I pay a rather substantial amount of taxes, and you can imagine that I don't like it any more than you do. Number three, savings account. By this, I don't mean a savings account for your future retirement. I mean a savings account for contingencies, for emergencies, which most of us don't have that real problem like others have had, and maybe our parents have had in the past, because almost all of us have insurance, disability insurance throughout the firm for whom we work, so on. So this isn't as great a need as it used to be for younger people. But if you're self-employed, of course, you're going to have to provide this yourself. All right, so if I'm talking just about a contingency reserve, how much should you have in that contingency reserve? I can't answer that. It varies with the individual. Some people get $20 together, they figure they're rich, and they go out and spend it. Others, if they don't have $20,000 in a bank account, they are very nervous. So there is no answer to that. I would suggest you try and save 10% of your after-tax, after-expenses income. See, I tithe, I subtract my business expenses. Then I give 10% of what is left. Then I pay my taxes, and then I try to save 10% of whatever is left, okay, after tithing, taxing, and so on. Four, life insurance. How much and what kind? Well, that varies too, of course, but the how much should depend on what your emergencies, your liabilities are. If you have one child or no children, just you and your wife, chances are there isn't a great need for insurance. As a matter of fact, once you become, oh, say, 60 years of age, chances are you don't need any insurance anyway, except possibly for estate taxes, which if you have any large amount of assets, you probably have had an attorney who's told you to set up trusts, and you don't have the taxation problem either. But there are only two kinds of insurance, term and all other. That sounds simple, doesn't it? It is. There are only two kinds of insurance. Let me give you an example. Let's say that you call your automobile agent tomorrow or Monday, Tuesday, whenever you go back to work, and you say, in my case, Harold, the cost of my three cars per year is somewhere in the neighborhood of, I guess, $500. We'll pick that as a figure. But Harold, I know that at the end of the year, when these policies run out, I'm not going to get anything back from State Farm, am I? No. No, I'm sorry. Well, what if I gave you $500 more a year, and you put that money at 2.5% or 3% a year interest? Do you think your company would accept it? Because I'd like to get something back at the end of an X number of years from the money I put into my car insurance. Hey, sure, great. I'm sure the company would, because they can put it out at 6% or 7% or 8%, pay you the 2.5% or 3%, and give you back your money at the end of an X number of years. Well, that's the difference between term and all others. Anything that is not term insurance, in fact, if it isn't reducing term insurance, is insurance plus a savings account at 2.5% or 3% a year. Let me illustrate it. As a matter of fact, in this book, here's how you can succeed. You can read it yourself, but let me show you what he's talking about. He talks about a 20-year endowment, and I'm not going to define a 20-year endowment, but he says it costs $490 a year. Now, of course, he would have had to have taken a particular age, male or female, and so on. We won't go into all that. And he says that for a $10,000 policy, a 20-year endowment, would cost $490 a year. He does not define what kind of person he's insuring or how these rates are set up or anything, but we'll just take them at face value. If the policyholder lives 10 years, he will, of course, have an out-of-pocket cost of $4,900. All right? If he had purchased level term, and I'll draw you a picture of this policy. I'll draw a picture of both policies. 10-year term and 20-year endowment, which is up here. Now, each of them are for $10,000 initially. And here comes the difference. If he purchased straight term at $8 a thousand, it would cost him $80 a year for this policy. Same amount of initial protection, same amount of protection throughout the life of the policy. The difference, of course, of $410 per year is going into what is called the savings account that I mentioned a minute ago. And we could go into the interest and so on that he talks about, but that's not important. Here's the difference in the policies. This policy is building no cash reserve to speak of, a very minor amount, which would end at about the ninth year, would start down and come out to zero. This is the cash surrender value. In the 20-year endowment, after 2 years, you start to build your cash surrender value to $10,000 as the risk decreases from $10,000 to zero. The only difference between these two policies is the amount of money put out for that 10 years and the fact that in this policy you're not having a savings account, in this one you are. The company in both cases for the life of the policy must pay back $10,000. All right, now here's the part that I find interesting. The $410 a year, let's say this is Elvin and this is me. This $410 a year that I'm not paying for this $10,000 worth of insurance, I could put into my mattress, not make any interest at all. I could have $4,100 in my mattress. Whereas the insurance company may give Elvin back $5,200 over this period of 10 years. We only can consider 10 years, of course, in these because this is a 10-year policy. This is 20 as originally outlined. But this $4,100 that I've got in a mattress versus $5,200 Elvin has on his cash surrender value at the end of 20 years, I don't use this type of example. I have everything exactly the same, but he didn't. Anyway, the point is that if Elvin dies, how much is Joyce going to get from the insurance company at any time during the policy? $10,000. How much is my wife going to get from the policy, from the insurance company? $10,000. Well, what happened to the cash surrender value that's building up to $10,000 in 20 years for Joyce? It goes to the insurance company, doesn't it? Because all the insurance company is going to pay is possibly some accrued interest at 2.5% or 3% a year, plus the face value of the policy. What's Bev going to get if I die within that 10 years? If I die at the end of 10 years, let's take that as an example, she's going to get $10,000 from the company, she's going to get $4,100 I've got in a mattress. You might think about that for a while. But there's only two kinds of insurance, term and all others.
So, you've got to compare what the two wives get at the end of the 20-year period of two policies.
Well,
to be fair. I'm not a life insurance salesman,
well,
but there is.
Right.
But at the end, one gets zero and the other one gets zero.
Well, as I say, I usually use term to 65 or term to some period when the person probably has accumulated, you know, this $4,100 over here is their money. The savings that's in the mattress is our money. There is, even if I don't die. Well, I'm going to take too much time on insurance if I go any further into this.
Yeah, let me mention one thing on that, because John Watson was here the other day, didn't cover that. But we were talking, and he has Jackson Preferred, really feels that basically for most people, you're better off to go term insurance rather than the other, unless you want to build an equity in a policy as a savings that you're entrusting to that insurance company.
Yeah, but the problem is if you die, the beneficiary doesn't get that savings. That's the thing most people don't realize.
There are certain insurance companies now, at least in my area, which have developed a plan where you get a cash value plus the life insurance proceeds.
Well, anything that's not term is simply a... Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. You're going to pay for anything you get. Don't think just because you take a policy and the insurance agent says, well, we'll give you back the amount of premiums you put in at the end of X number of years, that's just your money coming back at 2.5% or 3% interest. And they talk about any more than 3%, they're not telling you the full truth, at least in 99% of the company. I used to sell insurance, so I know a little bit about it from experience. Okay, let's go on. There are lots of books on this. I mean, it's very easy to get this information if you're just aware that there's a problem. That's all I'm trying to point out to you. Five, real estate, raw land, speculation, or income are the two basic ways of investing in land. There are others, obviously, but the primary two are raw land, which I think in a hyperinflationary period, which we'll probably have for another 1 to 3 years, will probably be a very fine investment, which should go up in value considerably in the next 2-3 years. But the problem is, in real estate, number one, you have to find a buyer if you want to sell, and number two, you've got to get through the escrow and all the other legal hang-ups that do occur. And by the time you find a buyer, you may not have the market that you had when you started trying to sell it 2 or 3 years from now. Income property under price and wage control is an absolute guaranteed loss. If you have anything over 2 or 3 units that you're relying on for income, I strongly recommend that you sell them. I don't care what you do with the money. That's up to you. But if you have a fixed level of income due to the rents you can charge and increasing costs due to hyperinflation, sooner or later the costs exceed the income and you have a situation that is unsaleable because it cannot produce a profit. And nobody's dumb enough to buy your property if they can't profit. Now, you may be able to sell at a 10 or 20 or 50% discount, but that's not a desirable type of investment either. 6, stocks. Industrial type stocks are what I'm speaking about here now, like telephone, General Motors, Jersey, Steel, Westinghouse, all the other well-known companies that you all know. And as I mentioned the other day, there's a time to be in some investments, there's a time not to be in some investments. I think we're coming very close to the end of the time when industrial type common stocks are going to be in vogue. I think the Dow Jones average and stocks are going to go up considerably in the next few months to new highs on the Dow, which is the only index of any consequence that hasn't gone to new highs, I might add. But let me give you what's happened in 4 stocks that are in the Dow Jones average in the last several years to indicate that all stocks don't hit their highs at the same time, and of course they don't all hit their lows at the same time, but the timing of even the bluest of blue chip, don't ask me to define that term, have their problems, have their cycles, have their swings. Now, these are 4 different industries. American Telephone's in the industrial average, even though it's a utility, which is a ridiculous thing, but anyway, it is. It hit its high in 1964 at $75 a share, and last week when I checked these prices, it was $42 a share. Isn't that great? Oh, Mother Bell, you just don't dare, as a broker, talk against American Telephone. It's like talking against motherhood. But I do. When that stock split in 64, I was giving a lecture at Friendly Valley, as my wife will recall. And I said, I'll make anybody in the room a $5 bet, I wasn't a Christian then, that American Telephone will never exceed this price. I would have won every bet. Unfortunately, nobody took me up on it. General Motors, sometime prior to 1966, and my chart didn't go back far enough to get the top. Anyway, the top was at $114 a share. Currently is in the high 70s, 76 when I checked it. Standard of Jersey hit its high in 1964 at 93, currently 75. Now, I think it'll probably go up in the meantime, whereas most of the others are going to go down, these other 3. U.S. Steel hit its high in 1961 at 109, is currently 30, and there's been no stock splits in the meantime. So even the conservative, the ultra-conservative, the widow and orphan type stocks, which these are, don't necessarily go along with the rest of the stock market. And I would suggest that it's very unlikely that any of these 4, except possibly the oils, and here I only talked about Standard of Jersey, will probably never see their highs again in your lifetime or mine. I would make that prediction. I think it's very likely that, just for those of you that may have individual common stocks, industrial type, I think the high in the market will be made probably in September, probably somewhere between 1050 and 1100, and that the next target on the Dow will be 400 and probably take 5 years to get there after the high is made. I may be wrong on the timing, I don't care. It's the general top, the general area, and the general direction that I'm concerned with, because I'm not the type of broker that buys today and sells tomorrow. I try to put people in what I consider investment-type stocks, which I'll get to in a minute, what I currently think are investment-type stocks. All right, 7, bonds. There are two kinds of bonds, primarily corporate bonds and municipal bonds, which are and mortgages, which are the same type of thing. It's an investment where at X number of years you're going to get your principal back, supposedly, and in the meantime you make a particular rate of interest as income, interest income, as opposed to dividend income from stocks. I would pose for your consideration the distinct possibility that we saw the low of interest rates you'll see for many, many years in January and February of this year, and that you will see interest rates at all-time highs next year as we proceed into hyperinflation. The current rate of inflation is at least 8%, probably closer to 10% if the truth were known, and will probably exceed 12 and 15% in the next 2 or 3 years per year. So if you're making 4, 5, 6% a year in a savings account, cash value of insurance policies, I feel very sorry for you. Some of you are at retirement age, perhaps into retirement, and this is going to be an extremely difficult period of time for retired people who have no additional income except what's already been set up in Social Security and pension profit sharing plans or whatever from their employment and their savings. But all you have to do, you know, this is nothing new. Just look to Germany, Japan, France. Every country, every currency has gone through hyperinflation if the politicians could control it, and has wiped out the savings of those who have been prudent enough to try and protect themselves and their families by saving. I am absolutely opposed to bonds. I even turned down an order. A client called in the other day and wanted to buy some. I said, well, let me explain to you, and I told him what I just told you. He said, well, I still like to buy some. I said, well, I'll have to invite you to go somewhere else because I will not buy them for you because of the principle of what I see coming up. I may be wrong. I'm not trying to tell you I'm infallible. But if I see something I think is going to happen, I share it with my clients. Whether it costs me money or not is immaterial, because in the long run, it's going to benefit me and the client. 8, books and paintings. I don't have any knowledge for you in this area except to mention that they are a form of investment. I think they're in the speculative area, personally. But if you're a multimillionaire and you can spend a million of your greenbacks, worthless greenbacks, I might add, eventually, for something of a tangible worth that somebody else might give you some money for later on, great. You probably have the money to speculate. I don't. I wouldn't put it, if I had $1 million, it wouldn't be put into books and paintings to preserve for me anyway. 9, foreign currencies. That's a field all to its own. I have, unfortunately, not made an investment in shorting the British pound in the last 2 or 3 weeks. I wish I had. Had awfully good advice and didn't follow it because it's unfamiliar to me. I don't like to deal in things I don't understand. Well, I understand currencies, but I don't have a real good awareness of how to do it. And I could have followed somebody else's advice, but that's cost me money in the past, too. 10, coins. It is my humble opinion that you all should have $500 worth of silver quarters somewhere in a very safe place. Silver quarters, 1964 and earlier. I do not recommend numismatic coins because if we're going to have the depression after the next 2 or 3 years of hyperinflation that I expect, then your numismatic value will go down very, very rapidly and will become worth very, very little. This is going to be the bullion content of the coin. It will be important. You can also purchase silver bullion. I do not recommend that. Coins are already divided. You don't have to take a bar of silver and whack off a piece. First of all, of course, if you have a bar, you got to prove to the guy that you want to buy that loaf of bread from that it's silver, even though it has a mint stamp on it. He may not believe it. And after a while, you're going to chop that mint stamp off, and all you got is a little piece left anyway. It doesn't have a stamp on it. I do not recommend silver bullion. Only silver coins. I don't even recommend silver stocks right now. I may later on. I have in the past, but I don't know. But then we get to number 11, which is gold stocks, which I highly recommend that you invest in. I was talking with Mike last night, and he says that from time to time he'll have $20 or $30 that he could set aside if he had a place to put it. Well, obviously no stockbroker is going to take the time to invest $20 or $30. For people that have very, very small amounts of money, I would suggest you go the coin route first. Buy your silver quarters and dimes. I mean, it doesn't matter really what the denomination is. I have very big hands, and it's very difficult to put dimes into those little paper rolls, so I prefer quarters. If you have smaller hands, you might want to go to dimes. Anyway, Mike, and people that have very small incomes and very small ability to save, I strongly recommend silver coins, and possibly gold coins. The British sovereign, which had a low of about 10 last year, is up to around $17 a coin, and has been as high as $19 a coin about a month ago. Gold's dropped back from 67 to 65, so the coins have dropped back. And I think you'll see those coins at $40, $50 a piece in the not-too-distant future. And maybe hundreds of dollars if we go into the real severe depression that I think is a distinct probability. Gold stocks are for the people who have more money to invest, because after a while the coins get kind of heavy. $1,000 worth of silver quarters weighs about 40 pounds. And there aren't very many women that could carry very many $1,000 worth around with them. So you can have a lot more money in a certificate that represents 100 or 1,000 shares of ABC gold stock, and anybody could carry that around. There will be a time, I expect, when I will not recommend gold stocks. I think that there will be a time when our government may get so totalitarian that they confiscate some stocks. And I think the first ones they would confiscate would be the foreign stocks. And the only stocks, the only gold, almost exclusively I recommend the foreign gold stocks, particularly the South Africans. 12, I mentioned it was weapons. How many of you read The Knife and the Switchblade? Oh, not very many. I'm sorry. I haven't read it either. The Cross and the Switchblade. Okay, what was the main weapon that these people had? I don't mean the adversaries. I mean the people who were the Christians. Their prayers and the Holy Spirit, right? Pardon me? Two-edged sword, right. Okay, that's a weapon, isn't it? And if you have a real ability to use that weapon, that's probably the only one you need. But there's some people who aren't quite as advanced in this whole area, including myself. And as a reserve deputy sheriff and as an instructor in pistols and rifles for the NRA, I have a lot more familiarity and experience with weapons of the other type. And I have several of each. And I have a crossbow. I have lots of other things. Slingshots, they're good for shooting birds, for food. But for protection of your family, which may result if we don't have the don't have the rapture and or the tribulation quickly, you may have to use. And the Bible doesn't say, thou shalt not kill. It says, thou shalt not murder. And if somebody's attacking you and your family, you have every legal and moral, legal so far, and moral right and obligation as a Christian to protect that which you have, particularly life and limb. And if it has to be done with weapons of the steel type, then I feel I am completely justified in God's sight to do that and obligated to do so. 13 was a shelter. Some of us are going over to our cabin tomorrow, and my original motivation for getting that cabin was a retreat. That's 5 years ago. I wasn't a Christian then either. In the meantime, we thought it would be a great vacation spot. It's turned out to be just too darn far away. It's 950 miles from door to door. But I still have it as my ace in the hole if the worst comes to worst before I hope the Lord leads me to leave Los Angeles. Because any metropolitan area will be an absolute death trap if we have anything worse than the Watts riots and so on, which I really am convinced we're going to have. About 2 years ago, well, let's put it this way. In order to change my thinking, you'd have to show me how the trend is changing. And it's not. It's accelerating in that direction. I'd be most happy if anybody could show me how it's changing. I'm working on it for that. As a reserve deputy, I do everything I can to try and do things that are good, even to the hippies that we arrest, the Satan slaves. I've had the experience of arresting some of those people. They're absolutely animals and would slit your throat and nothing flat. I could tell you some of the sex perversion that goes on, but maybe you already know about it, so I won't. It's a tragedy, but it's real. I'm an optimist. For 5 years, I had perfect attendance in my optimist club in North Hollywood. Perfect attendance. That's very unusual for 5 years. And if I say, like as an example, I don't recommend bonds, that's not being pessimistic, it's being realistic. The interest rates are going to go up and the value of bonds goes in the opposite direction, always. So, when I talk about these things that maybe you haven't thought about, you will if you read this book I mentioned the other day. Harry Brown is the fellow who mentioned me as his source of information on gold stocks. How You Can Profit from the Coming Devaluation. Any bookstore, I'm sure, has it because it has been a bestseller. I think the only book that's succeeded is in sales in the last 2 years is The Late Great Planet Earth, which I feel is the most important book other than the Bible to any individual. But if we have to retreat, which I hope we don't, but I was going to share with you, 2 years ago, the Los Angeles Police Department put on an institute for peace officers. You couldn't get in unless you had a badge. It was entitled Riot Control, Internal Warfare, and Officer Survival. Now, police force is to, you know, arrest people for speeding, burglary, robbery, you know, all these good crimes that have been set up on our statutes. But to fight riots and warfare and be concerned about your own personal, individual protection. The main theme of the whole three-week session was think ambush every time you answer a call. It was very appropriate at that time because two officers just a week or two before had been shot in an ambush in Los Angeles. I think it was Pasadena or San Gabriel, somewhere over there, some real clean area. But think ambush. What a thing for a peace officer to have to think every time he gets a call over the radio to go help somebody. Somebody may be there to do him in. 14, food and water. As I said, the ultimate store of value. I just mentioned I think everybody should have $500 worth of coins after you have a year's supply of dehydrated food and a water supply. Now, most of you have had a chance to talk to me since Sunday, and I don't think any one of you could have come to the conclusion that I'm an alarmist or an extremist except for Christ. And I'm not standing here trying to alarm you to the point of anxiety, because the Bible tells us not to be anxious. I'm trying to alarm you to the point of concern about the possibility, and in my opinion, probability of some of these things happening. And what I think you should do to prepare yourself. The only product that I know that is really palatable The only food that I found that I consider palatable is that product put out by Sam Andy, which is a company in Los Angeles. For a family of four, for subsistence food, I'm not talking about steak or anything like that, dehydrated food that tastes good, that your children would eat after a couple of days of not eating, costs about $1,300. If you have some slingshot or bow and arrow or a rifle, 22 caliber is an excellent rifle caliber for hunting, I might add. Very inexpensive. You can carry around 500 rounds in your back pocket if you have a big pocket. This $1,300 plus game that you may be able to acquire could save your life and the things that I foresee coming up. Now, my time is up. If Alvin will be so kind as to ask how many people might want to talk to me later this afternoon and where and when, I'll be more than happy to accommodate anybody that's interested.